said, I got this call, and I will promise not to use on me. And I think I will be able to handle this. So this is understanding reports with HWPNC. So why do you want to optimize? We'll learn about that. Power consumption is a new fun thing. Cooling isn't free. No one knows that in New York. And passcode turns out to be better than slow code. There's things people usually do wrong when they optimize. Usually they fix the wrong piece of code. Often if they're really into it, they spend all their time optimizing stuff. And it's not the first thing you want to do to your code. You should choose realistic workloads. You should be able to record the measurements. Okay, let's talk about this. So this is from a tutorial, so I want to cut out a lot of the tutorial stuff and just talk about the technology. So how many people use GProf? If you use GProf, is a tool that was built 20 years ago on the VSDs to do profiling. It was originally called Prof, and there's a GNU version, so that's called GProf. Use a compiler option called -pg, which builds your code for profiling. But the way in which it does this is it adds instructions and it adds code into your binary. So it actually introduces extra overhead into the code you're profiling. This is called the probe effect. So, which comes from the old days of electrical engineering, where you would add a probe to a line, and you're like, oh, I don't see the problem anymore. Well, that's because you've got an electrical probe on it. So if you build with PG, you actually have a probe effect. Your code will run slower, will use more CPU time. The kernel has to take more time to actually do the profiling. There's a profiling tick. This profiling code that gets called in the kernel every so many ticks, and it records what your kernel is doing and records your call graph. So you can say, oh, look, this function's always been called and this function's always been called. So this is the way things were until, well, you can either do it with GProf or you can use, like, a bus analyzer, which is not a lot of fun. So as we all know, processors are getting faster, you've got more stuff on the chip, you've got more space on the chip, what's Intel going to do with that, or AMD? One of the things they did was they started putting performance counters, basically little counters inside the chip that count all these events that happen. We'll talk about those events later on. So counters on a chip are going to be about the lowest impact you can have in the system because it's not part of the operating system. You don't have to instrument your code. You can take any piece of code that's been written, as long as you have debug symbols for it, because you'll want to look at them later, not because you need to run it in debug mode. Take any piece of code that's running, and the chip will just basically wake up during an interrupt and go, oh, what's running now? Well, it's that function. Well, I'll store that in the kernel. So also, the CPU has the most knowledge about what's happening to it. So with GProf, all you can get is a profile of the execution of your code. You find out, you know, this function got called this many times, and we spent this much percentage of our time in it. But the CPU can tell you things like memory accesses, I/O, bus transfer. It can record the use of special instructions. So there's a whole bunch more information you can get out of this. HWPNC is available on two families of processors, the AMD and the Intel line, K7 and K8 for AMD, and then every Intel processor from the Pentium 2 has had some form of this in it. As the chips got bigger and faster and you had more die space, there's a lot more counters. So the things you can count, the things you could record on a Pentium 2 were very small, and the number of things you could count simultaneously was small. Well, you get to like a modern Xeon, and there are 220 possible things you can count. And you can you can count a whole bunch of different things at the same time, because the processor has all this kind of computer. Both AMD and Intel make this really difficult in some ways, because their marketing names for processors and their internal names for processors are different. So when you start using this stuff for anything more than the basic, like counting instructions, which is the same thing as your typical style performance analysis, you wind up reading a book about that thing, which is the, it's in the last slide, but it's the Programmer's Guide to the Intel Processor, right? So you have to know, okay, well, if Xeon 5400 happens to be the core microarchitecture, right, and a core 1 and a core 2 are different, and, this is this microarchitecture, this is this microarchitecture. You have to know all that to know what the hell's in the data. The programs that the user level programs for HWPNC make this somewhat simpler because you can say, tell me all the counters you know about, and the device driver will come back and say, here's all the counters I know about. So that's helpful. So you really need to refer to the processor manual. And it's completely moronic. A Xeon 5100 and a 5400 are different, right? I mean, this is like ridiculous. So how does this work? So you get these counters kept on the chip. The chip generates an interrupt. You know, once you burn in the chip to say, you know, I'm interested in these events. The HWPNC driver is an in-kernel driver, which is documented. And it takes the result of the data that comes to an interrupt and sticks it in an in-kernel buffer. And then periodically, something like the user level program like PNC Stack will copy that out. What you're normally doing is,
Excellent.
Now I will last. So it sticks it in a memory buffer in the kernel, so it's pretty low overhead. And, you know, periodically does it copy it out of the kernel into a file. And there's this usual little program, PNC Stat, which we'll look at later, that does all that work, that talks to the kernel driver and programs it and gets the stuff out of the kernel and into a file and files. By the way, you probably don't want to, like, for instance, record your events into an NFS file. Unless, of course, you want to record NFS traffic. So there's sort of this matrix of how this works. There are four different things that can happen, and you can combine them in a couple of ways. So there are what are called process mode counters, and those are, you put a counter on a specific process, you want to watch HTTP run, or you want to see what happens when, you know, some of the like bind, you want to profile a bind, or I'm profiling the code at work with this, and I'm running one of our daemons at work. So that's process mode counter. And then there's the system mode counter. You do a system mode counter, which is, show me things no matter where it is. Show me the kernel, show me everything. Now, of course, to do that, you have to have root, because it would be a security problem if you could look at everything in the kernel all the time. And then, so that's one side, which is whether or not you're doing process or system layer. And then there's the question of whether you're doing counting or sampling. Now, I've yet to find a really good use for counting. Counting is a simple number. It's like, okay, I ran this program, and it had this many cache misses, or it had this many divide instructions, or it had, but it's really just like one count. You just get a number out. Just look at that. What's more useful is what's called sampling mode, which is where you continue to run the program and the kernel periodically comes, you know, the driver periodically goes in and goes, oh, okay, sample this, and then record the call graph, record what functions were being executed. So, the reason that these can be combined is you can have, for instance, process mode counters and sampling mode, or you can have process mode counters in counting mode, or you can have system mode with sampling, et cetera, et cetera. You can combine them in a couple of different ways. So here's an example, a very short example, of what you get on a modern Xeon processor. So, you know, if you type into the system and say PNC stat minus PNC control minus capital L, and say, oh, here's all the counters I know about. And they're named in this funky way, which is IPM, V2, which is burning through the processor. And then things like, on alternate core cycles, so how long was the processor not in the halt state? Instructions retired. Now, this is kind of the traditional, if you're looking like at a GPROP output, because the number of instructions you retire is how long something executes, right? So the less instructions in a function, the faster it's running. But then you get all kinds of stuff like last level cache references, last level cache misses, branch instructions retired, mispredicted branch instructions retired. This in particular is a good one to look at. Once you've gotten the instruction count down on a piece of code, when you miss branches, you're actually paying a very high price on the processor. So you would like this number to be as small as possible. And as I said, there's 217 of these on exam. So 217 different possibilities, most of which you will never use. So how are these named? Basically, the first thing is the processor. So IPM is the Intel, the latest Intel processor. You guys who did the patch for that, pick that up and why. P4, P6, P7. Version and then your name. And
what previous deed didn't make these up. Like the guy just goes, you did all the work, didn't make these up. These are exactly transcribed from the Intel and the AMD manuals. This is what they call their counters. So there's a one-to-one mapping. You look in the book, you're like, oh, I can count this. Oh, I can count this over here. This is what you want. There's a bunch of convenient aliases for the things you are most likely to use. So I talk about branch mispredicts, branches as well, cycles, data cache misses, instruction cache misses, instructions, number of instructions required, interrupts and unhalted cycles. So on almost any processor, these will map to the correct fancy name that you have to remember. So if you're doing very basic profiling, I mean, the first thing I always do is I run with instructions, like just show me where all the time is being spent. How do you get this into your kernel? Well, you add these two lines, HWPNC hooks, HWPNC, and you build your FreeBSD kernel as you normally would. I took the slide out where I show people how to build kernels. I figured you guys would be okay. And then once you've got it into your kernel, you can see if it's there by doing this command gamc control minus little l. This is not listing the available counters. What this is listing is how many slots on the chip can you use to count. So what you see here is the TSC, which is the time interrupt. And you've got two V2 PMCs and three fixed PMCs. Generally, you only want to be using one at a time. And you can do really complex stuff. You could actually make all of these active. You can say, I want to count instructions, and I want to count this, and I want to count this. But correlating that data at the end is really hard. So I've never found a use for actually using this many at once. I suspect Intel's V2, which uses all this stuff, might use more things. And if you use, I think it's called Shark, on Mac OS X, they are using this stuff as well. And that will show you where the hotspots are in this stuff. So I'll show you what happened when you actually run this stuff. I took the Unix Mesh set of benchmarks and I picked a few programs from it and just ran them with HWPNC because basically showing you the code I use at work would probably be a problem. So this is really simple. This is the old ping pong test for context switches. So you got two processes, they've got two pipes between them and they bounce a message back and forth and that causes them to context switch in and out. This is what the code looks like. This is also an eye chart. You can read this or let them drive a car in the car. Really simply, you get these two pipes, and you write back and forth, and that's what wakes up each process. Go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep, wake up, context switch. So there's two programs that are used to basically control the system. There's PMC control, which we looked at, that other thing that listed the available slots. Dash L, which I won't show you because it'll fill up three pages, is what lists out all the possible counters. But the program you're going to use most often is PMC stack. We're going to show that in a second. This may take most of your messages, measurements, it has many possible arguments. And I'm only going to cover the basics today. So there's a full length page on it. And actually, the documentation for this stuff is relatively well written. So you need to tell PMC stack what type of counter you're using. When we talk about whether we're going to do process mode, system mode, sampling, or counting. So sampling mode counters are capital T and capital S. And counting mode counters, which sounds ridiculous, are lowercase B and lowercase s, and P is process and S is system. So you do PMC stat minus capital S, you get everything for the entire system, all applications, everything is fine. But as I said, system mode counters can only be used with rootly privileges, as it should be. So what do you get out of this thing? Well, if you do a simple counting style, if you run this context, you just get a count. So you say, well, tell me how many instructions this thing takes. And this output here is actually the output from the benchmark. So the benchmarks are all measured in the number of loops that they can execute. That was the way that it was actually developed by Byte Magazine, which tells you how old these are. that was their way of saying, okay, well, this is a number that's easy to just do. It's like, however many loops you can do, more loops, faster, that's good. So this is process mode counting. This is only counting the number of instructions that were executed by context one. It's not counting anything once the thread of control goes into the kernel. And there were many instructions, 743 million instructions. you know, you just put the executable out here. This is an argument to context one. And then this is the output. So if you want to do something really simple, if you just, you know, got a program and you want to count, you know, how many instructions does it take to run, and then you optimize it or you change, like, for instance, you change a compiler option, you go from -02 to -03, this is a good way to see if your optimizing is working. Because sometimes if you go 03, you actually get worse runtime. So actually, yeah, for this program, it tells us very little. Single execution is insufficient to tell us anything about the program. You have to do multiple trials, figure out what's going on. And simple counting of instructions doesn't tell us what the bottleneck is. It just tells you the program took this long, and well, maybe with a three it takes this long, or it takes this long. So you can run multiple trials. The difference thing here is, the first one takes way more instructions than these. Some of that is the effect of starting the program up, right? So you're loading the pages into memory, and you're actually getting penalized for some of that. But it's variable. You're not going to get the same number every time. And so you can't just take a single sample and expect that to work. So one of the cool things with HWGMC is that there's a whole bunch of things you can count. And if you're doing optimization, instructions may not be the only thing you care about. Cache coherency is really important. You know, you've got now 2, 4, 6 megabytes of L2 cache on those processors, but you don't want to trash that. One of the interesting things that Robert Watson was using this for was to profile networking code. And it turns out, if your MBUFs are laid out poorly in the kernel, you will get worse performance merely because you are losing cache coherency. And every time you go look at a memory buffer in the kernel, you happen to be trashing a cache line. And you only find out things like that by using serialization of HWGMC. So, there's different forms of cache stresses, counts of special instructions. Let's look at a few of those. We looked at some of this stuff earlier. So, you can count things like special CPU instructions, including things like SIMD, SSE, and math instructions. So, where I work, we do a lot of math. And division is much more expensive than multiplication. So we would like our code to have as few divisions and actually as few divisions and as few multiplications, but we're going to trade it off. You want a lot more multiplication and a lot less division. So this is Unix Bench's arithmetic benchmark called Arith08. You'll notice these are actually a lot closer. Because it's not just simple instructions, this is how many division instructions there are running this. So if you run this for 1 second, which is about 1 minute, there's only 571, depending on how you get through here. There's a lot more multiplication instructions. Well, you kind of like that. So that means that this code will be somewhat faster. You'd like to have less of both, but it's a trade-off. You want less division. So, one of the cool things you can do is, so like I said, this doesn't show you a bottleneck, this just shows you an absolute number. And you have this many instructions. So what you'd like is to get something that looked like gprop output that gave you functions and said, this function is taking this percent of the instructions or this percent of whatever thing you're looking at. This is a multi-stage process. First, you collect all the samples. So this is running PMCSAT, and we can actually dump this into a file in /temp or somewhere. We're counting instructions in process mode, and then we're running the Towers of Hanoi program, which is this little recursion program that moves rings around between towers, the Towers of Hanoi. And then once you've collected this set of samples, you can then convert them to what's called a gprop flat format. So you can then take this and run it through gprop and turn out the output. So you collected it in here, you then run PNC set on this with a dash G, and depending on what you collected, you actually get a convenient little directory that contains, what we'll see later is it contains the GPROC output for the program. But if you were doing system mode sampling, it would give you the GPROC output for the program, for the kernel, for any kernel loaded modules that were not statically in the kernel, so you would get this whole little directory of stuff. With a simple program, you just get one thing and it's kind of like that Gmod. So you run GPROC against the program that you ran, and against the output, and then you get, hopefully, this, which is not horrible to read. This is GPROC output. But one of the things to notice is that a bunch of this stuff is completely useless. Like, these numbers don't actually get added up, because it's not really doing the same thing GPROC was. It's just a convenient way to look at the data. What these numbers actually mean, so you'll see there's two functions, move and main, and 99% of the time is in move. Well, that's because that's where all the work of the towers and canoe is done. Main is tiny, it just calls move and it does this recursive work. And it's a very trivial program. But a really important thing to remember when you're using HWTFC with this is not CPU time. This is not a percentage of CPU time or anything like that. This is a percentage of the number of events you ask it to record. So in this case, 99.8% of the instructions executed in the program were executed by this function move. But if you said, tell me how many cache misses, then this would actually represent cache misses and not instructions. And it's the first mistake everyone makes at this. You're like, hey, wait, that makes no sense, because it can't, that function is tiny. But that function may be like two overlapping for loops that are whacking your cache, in which case that's going to be a very high function. So this is just counting instructions. And this, yeah, this stuff you can make a wrong list. So this is what the Hanoi program does, and this, as you'll see, is why all of the work is in here, because this is the little recursive function, and this just calls it. So 99.8% is here. Are there any questions? Yes?
You say whacking the cache.
Mm.
Does that have to do with not understanding how to program to use the cache on the chip, or is it because of the obscure way Intel implemented the L2 cache?
There's actually more reasons than that. I mean, you could, for instance, there's always the argument of, do we use -02 or -03 for the compiler? Because you'll get either a time space, you'll get a space trade-off or a time trade-off. It depends on what the code is. Many people do not think about cache effects when they program, and certainly many chip people who have implemented caches have made our lives difficult. So one of the fun things now is I know the Intel stuff a lot better because we've got a lot of it at work. And we don't have any AMD anymore. But, you know, these things where they're like, oh, it's a fully, you know, two core, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, yeah, but you share a bus directly to the L2 cache, and the L2 cache is shared. And so that means if things migrate between two cores on the same CPU, they may actually trash the cache. So, and it's hard to program for those things. I mean, there's simple stuff writing your loops correctly. But it can be very hard to get that right, because the compiler and your languages, and C in particular, C++, don't give you a good idea of what you're doing to your cache when you write code.
Now, do the gamers tend to take advantage of the caching more than anybody else because of performance on their end?
I don't do games. I know that high-performance computing people, like scientific computing, like the guy who does, you know, big clusters, they really care. Where I work in financials, we really care. And so we will look at this stuff and go, that function, that needs to be rewritten. So I have to mention this is what you're counting shows up in the output. So remember, if you're counting instructions or cache misses or math instructions, or you're going to make mistakes. So let's look at three different counters with the same program. So there's another benchmark, UniSpanish. This is the Whetstone benchmark. And we'll look at the GPROC output for instruction multiplications and divisions. And Whetstone is a math intensive, supposed to be a math intensive benchmark. Well, in terms of the instructions retired, and it's got these really well written function names from the 1970s. P3 ELMPA. In terms of total instructions, P3 wins. That's almost 50% of the instructions. And actually, these two functions here execute very small amounts of functions, probably because they're actually offloading to a MAC instruction. It's not a but try to keep in mind that it was basically P3, less known as PLMPA for instructions. But if you look at multiplications, you don't even see PO in this. It doesn't even register. Instead, you've got P3, less known as PA. And then if we look at divisions, it's almost all P3. Well, if you look at the source code, it's relatively obvious why this is the case. That's because P3 is all this little bit of math, right? There's a division in here and two multiplications. If you look at PA, there's one division, it's mostly additions, and it's all array work. We're going to put this in the array. We get an array. And if you look at PO, well, this doesn't do any math at all. It's just doing assignments. So, of course, this is a relatively simple program to analyze because it's only got a small number of functions. Yes?
Now, does that go to the fact that you might want to put together a division, addition, multiplication test?
What do you
mean? You're combining in the first one two math functions. Mm-hmm. Would you want to test for each math function ever? Would you ever want to test for a separate math function, addition only, subtraction only?
You could. And there is a thing that says, tell me all the additions as well. Right?
Yeah.
It's not just multiplications and divisions.
Because I see you're mixing them.
Yeah. Well, this is just the WebSum benchmark. I mean, I couldn't even, you know, I've never actually sat down and analyzed it. It's like, oh, well, this does a lot of math. Let's look at it. It's not one that I picked because, of, you know, I deeply studied the WebSum.
Have you guys thought about optimizing separate addition, multiplication, function, division?
In terms of, where I work, people actually work on that. Happily not me. I'm an OS guy. As far as I'm concerned, it's all fixed point. That's that. You know, once we took doubles out of the kernel, that's all that. So the cool thing with HTML, one of the cool things as a kernel developer with HTML PMC, is that the kernel is just another program for this thing. You don't have to, first of all, if you've ever compiled the kernel with profiling of anything, whether you have the kernel witness or your kernel block profiling, or you can actually build the FreeBSD kernel with -pg and get a profile of kernel, but you will kill your performance and you will probably hide any problem you're having. And that's one of the things with the probe effect, is that the probe effect will overcome your ability to understand the underlying stuff. And that's that. So the cool thing is, kernel is another program, HTTP PMC driver is re-entrant and in the kernel and can actually measure the kernel. And it's the same tools, just different options, and again, less bureaucracy. So instead of executing a program, you're writing the kernel, and you basically use a system of counter. And you just leave this running. In the current patch level that I got from the Xeon, it occasionally causes an NMI to get continuous run, which I haven't figured out that up yet. But that'll get fixed. So you just leave this running and it just collects samples into here, and you do the same thing. When you're done, you control C this program and save all the stuff and sample that up, and then you can gprof. You can run that a gprof thing on that. So on an idle kernel, if we count instructions happily, we find out that 90% of the time is in the idle task, right? And so this is all internal to the kernel. This is CPU search highest is the scheduler function that is looking for the highest priority thread to execute. There's an ACPI function that I have no idea what it is. And then there's spinlocks. So the scheduler uses spinlocks. So one of the nice things to see here is that when the system is idling, it's doing very little, it really is idling, it really is doing very little work. It's just sitting there waiting for your, you know, work. The nice thing is then you can ask about caching, you know, caching system. So and I have no idea what this is yet because I didn't know what it was code. This is unsurprising to be registered. These are all file system stuff. Not, you know, next. Most important file system. But basically, whatever is doing the search for the highest priority thread is doing something weird with cache. There's some data structure that is not aligned or is doing something to the cache, because when this is idle, it's all here. So I haven't gone with deeper dive.
Is it data cache on it?
Yeah, this is data cache. It's not a version cache. So some further reading. I'm almost done. This is the thick manual, one of the many thick manuals I mentioned. If you really want to use this stuff, you can get these online, which is nice, because you really want to search through them with a PDF viewer. The Intel 64 and IA32 Architecture Software Developers Manual, Volume 3D. It's because of how many volumes are up. It's like 200 to 300 pages worth of this counter means this, and you can not use this counter with this counter, and this counter is really fucking genius. And then the original stuff on GPROF was written by Sue Graham and Esler and Medusa back in the 80s, so that shows how old this is. And if you want to really do a good job at performance analysis, this is about the only book I would ever recommend. Yard Computer Systems Performance Analysis. It's like a 20-year-old book. It's still the best book about how to design an experiment and how not to fool yourself. So one of the biggest problems you have with doing performance analysis, or most people have doing performance analysis, is they get either very focused on one component, or they don't take enough measurements, or they don't design their experiment correctly, and they wind up optimizing the wrong thing. That is the most common thing I've seen people do. And this last book will prevent you from doing it. All right, so, are there more questions? There's even another slide. Are there more questions? Yes.
So this can do interrupts, right? This can track the types of interrupts?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, would you or could you use this for, like, disk I.O. bottlenecks?
Sure.
Network?
I'm looking at it for networking stuff. So this combined with dtrace, which I should probably do a different presentation on at some point, this combined with dtrace is actually quite a powerful tool, because you can basically say, with dtrace you can look at, you know, what's being called when. And also dtrace like HWPNC has a low probe effect. I recently got dtrace running in 7, and even if you trace every single system call and say fire every time there's a system call in the system, you only reduce performance by 75%, which sounds like a huge number, except that that's a large number of system calls that you're like tracing. Right? So if you trace like a couple hours tracing a networking device driver, and there was no appreciable slowdown in the networking. I basically ran NetPipe benchmarks and was like, oh. Right, I could basically have it fire every time the packet received interrupt in the device driver fired, and the performance barely changed. It was very impressive.
So you could do wait state, or how would that correlate to, like, if you're waiting for an application, you're waiting for this
interrupt? If you wanted to do that, I would actually use dtrace instead of HWPMC. But the thing you would do is you would basically load up your system with your disk performance benchmark, whatever you're using to cause that. You can run HWPMC in system mode, do the GPROF output, and actually an interesting way to do that is, what if we allow that? The disk driver, if it's a loadable module, the cool thing you can do is when you do the output, instead of just getting kernel.gmon, you'll get kernel.gmon, and then you'll get, you know, ATA blah 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 dot gmon. And you can look just at the ATA graph in terms of what its instructions were, or its caches were, or whatever it was doing. At this point, when I look to use these two tools together, I usually use dtrace first to track something down. Then I use HWPNC to put just at one time. Yeah. Other questions? All right. Well, thanks.